Good evening and welcome to the Disney Discord podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Graham, and tonight I'm joined by Bernardo. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Always here to talk about Disney and Universal.
Why is it you put that pause in there? Every time I say, are you there, you pause for 10 seconds just so I'm like, oh, nah, it's gone wrong.
But really?
Only when I say hello for the first time. It's only ever when we join the recording first. Welcome. We have a lot to talk about. We've got through the change freeze. We've got through the, you know, Disney shuts down for Christmas and New Year, and we're now on the other side of that. We've had some fantastic news on Universal Great Britain. That gave us a lot to talk about over the festive period. But we're going to dip back today to specifically Disneyland Paris, I think, is our primary sort of topic today. And then we'll maybe take a quick explore at what's happening, because there's some developments in Epcot. And I think there's some news on Tiana's water adventure thing.
Bayou Adventure.
That's it, yeah. I was trying to remember its name. Yeah. This is what happens when you're so rusty. First things first is Disneyland Paris have launched their new electric sky parade, electric sky parade, which is a reimagining of the, as they say, the 1992 version of the Main Street Electrical Parade. And it's quite interesting.
On that park ride.
Yes, it did. I mean, the Main Street Electrical Parade gets about. I mean, it's the one that's probably toured, you know, the majority of
the most
of
Disney parks. Yeah, yeah. I think it's been every Disney park but Shanghai. Not sure about Hong Kong, but it's traveled the world. Yeah, interesting.
It's a well traveled part. It is a well traveled, and obviously, a lot of people randomly believe that there was only ever one. There was, in fact, there's two full versions of the Main Street Electrical Parade, and then there's a bunch of sort of duplicate and sort of floats that go between them. I wish I'd prepared a little bit better, but somebody, I'll try and find it, but somebody had shared this awesome graphic of all the different versions in a line, like all the different versions, and it was fantastic to kind of see, you know, where it had run and where it hadn't run, and where, you know, what that meant for different
places. Other versions, like Fantillusion and all the others, Paint a Night, you know, there have been various iterations of this, type of parade.
I've got it. So it's at Carter Sauce, Sam Carter on Twitter, that shared it, and it's a fantastic graphic that's got all the sort of different versions, and he's crowdsourced this, and he reckons there's version A, B, C, and then there's 2B versions that have kind of been modified. So, yeah. So Disneyland, Walt Disney World, Tokyo Disney, Disneyland Paris, and Hong Kong Disneyland have all had varying Main Street Electrical
Very
Parades.
Fun.
Now, the interesting thing is the Main Street Electrical Parade, if you go back, was basically a nightly attraction that ran more often than not. In fact, if you take the entire history of Disneyland, the Main Street Electrical Parade has been there more than it has not been there. And you can't say the same for Walt Disney World, because it didn't have Main Street Electrical Parade, but it had Spectrum Magic and everything. So a night parade is more regular there than not. And then Tokyo Disneyland, which I think is the only one that still, I think Dreamlight still runs in Tokyo Disneyland. Yeah, it does. So Dreamlights, you know, Tokyo Disneyland has run that since it opened. Disneyland Paris, again, although it wasn't Main Street Electrical Parade, had Fantillusion. So again, you've got a period in Disneyland Paris history where it was more regular than not, although that's about to change. We've got the drone show now, where night parades were a thing. So the truth is that if you go back to the park's history, it's less likely that you didn't see a night parade than did. So,
yeah.
To be totally honest, night parades are the normal, and not having one is the non-normal. So, I guess it's nice to see Disneyland Paris have come back on this. Now, I don't know how much of this. I've got this nagging feeling that they've done this deal with the drone company Dronisos, and they effectively, once the show's finished, they just send a guy every night to kind of run the show. There's nothing that stops them making the next show. And I think that's why we're seeing so many new drone shows, is because effectively, once they've built the show, it just runs the same every night. You don't, unlike a parade float,
yeah, it's very easy to run. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's super easy to run. You just have to program it, and then it's just clicking a button, getting the drones ready in place and clicking a button.
And the 500 drones, I mean, they don't really care what show they do. We've now, this is probably the first time, because this one has fireworks, this is probably the first time we have bespoke drones. The rest of the time, it's one of those interesting situations where, you know, it could do power of the night, and then immediately, as long as you change the batteries, I suppose, or recharge them. The minute you recharge the batteries, it could do the main the electrical sky parade. It could do the Bastille Day firework version.
Or the exactly.
Yes. So drones are really useful in the sense, unlike parade floats, they take up the exact same space regardless of what you do, which isn't very much. And they can do any show. So anyway, waffling on about drones and why drones are fantastic. You can actually listen to every other podcast on this, because we talk about this, I think, every podcast now. Just a reminder, if you're listening live and you're in the audience, please drop any messages or any comments you want in the chat and we will cover them. And if you feel brave enough, just hit join the stage and you can come on the stage and talk rubbish with us about Disney. And if you listen to this after, you should really join our Discord server and come in and do the podcast live with us, because it makes it more fun talking with other Disney fans. So, the Electrical Sky Parade, have you watched it?
I have watched several videos on it. I mean, your videos were amazing. I watched, I think, all of them that you put out, the closer ones, the first one. And for me, from looking at a screen, it already feels amazing, so I don't know how it'll feel there, you know. It's just, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. You've been there, so you can say.
It was cold. That is the first thing I'll say. It was very cold when it came out.
I've heard.
I mean, it was like -3 the first night, so I was already, and I got there quite early, and I got a good spot and everything, and I was fine right until some parent put their child literally on the bin I was standing behind. I was like, oh. And then they had them on their shoulders, and it was just, but it was fine. First thing I should say, none of the videos online capture the color of the drones. So if you go back, I mean, you've got videos as well, and you were obviously there for the New Year one where they've done the New Year drones and fireworks. Have a look at the colors on the videos versus what you've seen in real life. So this is the first problem we've got. All the videos online are kind of dull and kind of dark. In real life, every single drone really pops. Like, they're really bright. These are really, really, they've gone with very basic colors. They've gone, I mean, it's your reds, it's your greens, it's your blues, it's, you know, sharp orange and sharp kind of purple. There's no, if you look at the colors, they've gone for very bright, very solid colors.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, to be honest, so.
Unlike Power of the Night, which I think I would compare it to most, it definitely had more color. And that's what's
interesting.
I mean, Elliot the Dragon alone with the green was just very, very bright. And I thought, wow, this is incredible. I like that the soundtrack. I think they've done very well with the soundtrack. They do a 20-second interlude into what the Main Street Electrical Parade was for people who hadn't seen it. And then they do a sort of corrupts as it begins, and then it corrupts as it comes out, which is a really interesting effect of, like, the lights and sort of failing and then coming back up and getting powered up. It's that sort of, do you know that sort of, like, THX sound you used to get in the cinema?
Yeah,
so you'd sit down and be like, the audience is listening. It's that sort of feeling. And, you know, in the park, it's quite bassy, and you kind of get that sort of, oh, wow, something wild is happening round about me.
Yeah, and I found it interesting that they did that. I wasn't expecting. I was just expecting, you know, the normal soundtrack. So it was fun to see that they kind of played around with it.
It's interesting because it's almost like a lot of the shapes that they're doing are quite basic. So the dragon's quite basic. Some of the, you know, the creations in the sky are quite basic. And I think that I think that what they're doing is they're like, remember, we're recreating a 1999 version of a parade that was created prior to even 1992. We're creating a version that was created prior to even 1992. So you're looking at something through, you know, we didn't even have LED light back then. We had the, you know, they were compact fluorescent or whatever at the time. So you're dealing with something that's trying to look old while also showing off modern tech and drones. So
very fun.
Very impressive. The fireworks on the drones, I think I was ready for the pirate ship. For the ship that kind of has the little fizzle effect at the back of it. I was ready for that. I was not ready for the train to have steam coming out the funnel. And I wasn't ready for the dragon to kind of snort the smoke out its nostrils.
Yeah, that was very impressive. That was like, very impressive.
I wasn't prepared for that, and I think that it was done so tastefully and so well that actually it was very, very, it was a very impressive effect. The castle projections, I go back and forth on these because when I was there in person, I was too busy looking at the drones to really see what was happening on the castle. And I think that when I was looking at photos afterwards, when I was looking at my girlfriend's photos, and she filmed specifically just the castle, that has some of the drones in it too, but she filmed the castle, and that is again on one of my on my YouTube channel. You see that actually someone's put a lot of effort into animating the castle. Like, these are not simple animations. Like, you have the train traveling around the castle and coming out the, you know, the castle.
Yeah, they're very impressive too. And I mean, they do have to have those, because if the drones can't run, which is a problem that sometimes happens, and I think has happened at
least
once. So you have to rely on the projections. I haven't seen a video on the projections alone, so without drones. Do you know if they're somewhat different from the normal show, like a B version, or is it just the same? Oh, okay, it's the same. Because the one over at Studios, the Power of the Night, you do have an A and B version if there's no drones. So yeah. I was kind of expecting there may have been some changes, but I mean, you already have floats running around the castle.
I mean, I think it was DLP Guest EN or something that was there, and they said they didn't perceive there to be a weather issue for why the drones couldn't go out. So I do wonder that if it was maybe just, you know, they maybe had to test and they waited till, you know, that would have been show 5.
Yep.
And I think they've maybe, in the opening week, they've got to try the B mode just to make sure before it's signed off that it works. And if you follow, I think it's Pixie Dust BE, if you follow them on X, they pointed out, although they're very minute changes, they're basically angles of light changes. They're having slight tweaks to some of the lighting rigs and to some of the lights in the show already. Yep. So
yeah, interesting. Yeah, there were some differences in the animations. I saw that. I'm not sure if it was pixie dust, but I did see that, which is, you know, after a week, it's a surprise.
I felt the castle had so much going on, and I suppose it does have to in case the drones don't work, but there was so much going on in the castle that I wasn't taking it in because I was too busy looking at the drones. And the other thing is, this is probably the best I have ever seen the lights tied into any show that Disneyland Paris have done. So the lights in this show are spectacular. You're talking, you know, you don't really get the it lights, in the videos again.
The lights, like the floodlights,
the sky tracers. You've got the sky tracers are the brightest, and sharpest I've ever seen them. And I don't know if that was just because it was that cold, it worked really well. But I mean, if you go back and look at the videos, you've probably remember they told us for Dreams they had upgraded all the Sky Chasers.
And
then we couldn't really see a difference. Like we were all struggling to see a difference on the videos. You can see it now, so I don't know if they've held back and maybe this is them now getting used. Or but you go look at a video. Look at Dreams. Look for a video that's more than 2 months old on Dreams, and then look at a. Electrical Sky Parade video and tell me that the Sky Chasers are the same because they aren't.
I don't know.
Also got, so during parts of the show, the hub has like parade lights that normally are kind of static in color, but these are like flashing with like flashes going across them and like just interesting little things like that. The lasers fire at different locations than normal. There's a lot more colour, there's a lot more activity with the lights, which kind of gives it a faster pace. And I think the drones themselves are a bit slow, but it's covered well by the amount of random lights going around. And then finally, that sort of crescendo they do at the end where they put the logo up there with the Disney's Disney Electrical Sky Parade, and it does the collapse and the corruption collapse and then sort of rebuilds itself. Yeah. That is some phenomenal. The amount of work to get that to work must be unreal. Like, that was the moment. The train was impressive. The dragon was impressive.
The finale was worthy of a finale.
So I see in the chat here, Kitology, 100% right. There's lights in Main Street as well. And in the run-up, so the Symphony of Color season began, and Main Street, half an hour before, changes color, and each building on Main Street gets its own color, which I've posted some pictures of, but it's a very, very impressive sort of... It sort of brings out, like, the buildings almost look high definition. I don't know how to say this, but, like, they look higher definition than normal. And you've got that light, and it plays with the show as well. So it's a very well-integrated show. I was very impressed. Now, the one big problem they did have, the big problem that I did see is that on my first day there, Space Mountain was down, Big Thunder Mountain was down, Fantasyland was shut. So, it's a lot that's getting taken out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, we do have to look at it from a different perspective because, you know, January, we normally already get a lot of closed attractions. They say it's for refurbishment, but it's just because there's not enough people to fill those attractions. So, but even after that, you know, Big Thunder and Space Mountain, they have a lot of problems, and they've been having a lot of problems and more problems with each year that passes. Which could lead us to the next topic. Are you ready to leave Disney Electrical Sky Parade?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I want to say is thank you very much to Disneyland Paris for bringing this back. I think it's a really interesting part of Disney history. I don't think it's as good as having a night parade. I think it's very, very good, and I can understand why we've done it this way, and I would never take it away. I do think, though, it's slightly... There's a nostalgia to standing there with a night parade going past you. There's something that just is impressive about a night parade. That the drones are very impressive. Technologically, they're much more advanced, and I get the show can evolve a lot easier, and perhaps, it, you know, as we've seen, the drones just get better and better.
That
it's, you know, it's an 8
it's
out
just
of
not
10
on the same
me.
Level as a physical parade. That's what you're saying.
Paint the Night would be a 10 out of 10 for me. I think the drone show is an 8 out of 10, and that's do you know what, it is not to its discredit. I think it is fantastic at what it does. I think it's an amazing show. I really hope Disneyland Paris keep it, and I think they're going to keep it for a long time. Depending, someone's just put in the chat there, Zune in the chat has just put, you know, what's the best spot to see it? This is the amazing thing. I seen it from 3 different spots, and I've seen it from about 50 other spots on video. And I've got to tell you, every single spot you see something different. So I think the people who we were offered tickets to go into the reserved area by Disney, ultimately through communication nonsense between me and them, we actually didn't get our ticket. So I paid to go. I was always paying to go on this trip. So it's not that I had to pay. It's that I did pay to go on this trip specifically for this show. The people who were up front, I think, didn't see as much show as people who are further back. Like, I think on this one, the sweet spot is in that sort of circle off the hub and sort of just further back. I think if you're on Main Street, you're getting a better view than you're getting if you're right up close. Like, this is not something you want to be up against the castle. This is a get further back sort of gig. There's a lot more happening at the Main Street end. The entrance, there's the little bit down by the landscaping department. That's a good place to stand. And some other people said that the space in front of the Buzz Lightyear shop, I forget what it's called, it used to be
Constellations,
that's it. If you stand there, there's a big space there. That's apparently a very, very good space as well. So, I have not been... I'm going back in May, so I'll certainly be standing better areas. I think the show, given the projections and given the show, it's very easy for this to be exported to other castle parks. It's very copy and paste. And I think the other thing I would say about it is it could very easily be moved across into the studios and projected onto Tower of Terror. Like, I don't think there's anything... There was nothing... The castle and the drones worked really well together, but there was nothing that linked the two of them in the sense that it couldn't be in a non-castle park. So I think, and this is just me thinking out loud, this could be a really good one for Disney's Animal Kingdom. Like this, this is the sort of fireworks you can do when there's animals about. You know, your big problem would be if the drones fell, unlike in Disneyland Paris, where you could probably recover them. I think they'd just be stuck in the lake, but. You know, I can't see how this couldn't be a show that happened in Animal Kingdom. Like, this sort of show could absolutely be there.
Yeah, I mean, Animal Kingdom has the main problem with the sound and the animals. But, I mean, drones compared to fireworks, you know, it's nothing. So I really do think that if Disney World did drone show, I think it should be Animal Kingdom. It just makes sense. It's the part that hasn't... any show, so yeah.
I'm happy to wrap it up there. Amazing show, Disney. Thank you so much for doing it. Please keep it, keep evolving it, keep pushing it, because it's fantastic. And consider an electrical cavalcade.
Yes, please. Yes,
anyway, please. Mr. Bernardo, take us on.
So we're talking about the Big Thunder Mountain and Space Mountain and how they're constantly breaking down. So that's a very big problem. And let's just jump into the rumor. And that is Ali from Outsiders has said that the major next refurbishment should be Big Thunder Mountain with a most likely retrack of the coaster. So I don't know the specifics, but I think a roller coaster like that is supposed to last at least 20 years. And it's now been 32 years of constant usage, I think so, yeah. So it's a lot. And Space Mountain is a little bit younger, 3 years younger. But Indiana Jones also has, of course, so the elements don't get to it as much. But Indiana Jones also has a lot of these problems. And if you actually see the tracks, you can see all those spots they've been fixing. And if they keep on doing it, it's going to be more fixings than, you know, the actual track. It's just a retrack. I mean, Indiana Jones would be very easy to do a retrack. But Big Thunder Mountain being the priority seems to be interesting because they're taking the big undertaking first. So
the interesting thing you have to the one thing you have to kind of remember about this, Big Thunder Mountain takes more guests than Space Mountain does, just by the fact that as a roller coaster, it's much tamer. Now, it doesn't always feel much tamer, mm-hmm. but it is a much tamer roller coaster.
Yeah,
The second problem you've got with Big Thunder Mountain, you can only really retrack it in the summer. You can't really do it in the winter because mm-hmm. you're going to have to be outside to do it. And the other thing, Big Thunder's outside, whereas Space Mountain relatively is in good, you know, it's got better conditions for the track because although it's not climate controlled, it doesn't get hit with rain, it doesn't get hit with frost, it doesn't get hit with the usual sort of nonsense. Yeah. So, the other thing, and I know this is contentious, and I know in X everybody gets furious and is like Space Mountain's quite unreliable, but the data that I've got, and we've been reading wait times back till 2012, is that Space Mountain is a relatively reliable roller coaster. Now, I'm not saying, this doesn't mean it doesn't go down often. All roller coasters and every theme park in the world go down often. But in comparison, mm-hmm. Space Mountain's quite a reliable ride. It operates almost every single day that it's supposed to operate. And when it doesn't, it's a relatively quick fix and is back operating. If you compare that to other parks, if you compare that to some parks in the UK, if you compare it to some of the American parks, you've got certain rides in Busch Gardens, for example, that go offline, don't come back online for 3 months. That's not...
Oh, well.
That's, yeah. So Space Mountain being down for a day or two is reliable in the grand scheme of things. So I get the feeling that Disney doesn't see it as...
Yeah, I just think that, just to stop you there, because one major problem of Space Mountain, I think, is the launch, where they have to replace the cable. It used to be like every 6 months, but it's now become, less and less, and I think they've been doing like almost 4 to 5 months. Look, so they have to replace the cable every 5 months, and the problem is that it's old technology, and the roller coaster industry has evolved quite a lot. So there could be a lot more easier ways to do it. So yeah, while it is in a better shape, there are some elements that I think should be replaced.
Well, the show building, we've seen the images from, 2 years ago and now, and half the lights don't work. Like, it seems...
That's very bad.
This is the thing I struggle with. Why do we have, let's refurbish it to perfect and then let it degrade over the next 10 years? Like, why is it not considered that light doesn't work, we should fix it, sooner? Everything seems to require... on the flip side, what I do need to give them credit for, and Space Mountain and Big Thunder Mountain were down a lot, but it was -3, and the weather does severely impact those roller coasters. Mm-hmm. One thing I should say, every single part of Phantom Manor and every part of Pirates of the Caribbean, every funny effect and everything was working. We had the swinging pirate, we had the dueling pilot pirates, mm-hmm. we had the animatronic pop-ups, we had the cannons were working in the water, we had the cat. It was all working fine. And the ride was probably in great condition. And, we're quite often, we can be like, everything's degrading. But actually, I think the rides in Disneyland Paris are probably in the best shape they've been for a long while.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
I think they're in quite good condition. The park is in pristine condition. One of the things I noticed when I was there is the park is at a better standard. I mean, I was in, it wasn't that long ago, it was October, I was in Orlando, and Disneyland Paris in January is in a better condition than Orlando was in October. It was in much better condition. Every single part of it was in better condition than its Orlando counterparts.
That's pretty wild, considering we're talking about Disneyland Paris.
Disneyland Paris is now the flag bearer for kind of quality. Like, if you go down the main street Disneyland Paris, it's far better than what you're getting in Orlando. And that could just be because there's more wear and tear in Orlando and it's harder to keep up, but it is. The ride fronts, the Utopia ride front, the shops, you know, Star Tours, it was crystal clear quality in front of the screen and everything. Star Tours in Hollywood Studios is basically a fuzzy screen at this point. You know, because they were so interested in Galaxy's Edge opening that, you know, Star Tours got forgotten about. Like, it's wild, just the sort of difference. What Disneyland Paris doesn't have, like, I put up some photos. You can buy a lightsaber for £450 in Disneyland Paris. But you can build a cheap lightsaber, but there's not the you can't do the build the lightsaber experience that's, you know, 250, 300.
Yeah. That's a problem with Disneyland Paris. There aren't enough, you know, special experiences. There's a lot of those in Orlando, in Walt Disney World. Just off the top of my head. In Galaxy's Edge you have the build a lightsaber and the build a droid. Just those two, and then you have the new Space 220 restaurant in Epcot. You know, there's a lot of stuff to do that I think Paris could really use.
Well, let me diverge this onto our next topic, which I want to talk about, which is dining. So dining, a lot of people might not know this, but dining is one of the largest profit centers for any theme park in the world. Dining is, you know, ridiculously important to your bottom line. You want people to spend as much money as possible in the parks.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways they do this is you can get a meal plan. Now, this has always been a big thing in America, and you can see like Disney Food Blog and stuff. But in Disneyland Paris, it just, the meal plan is like an afterthought. The meal plan you can add on your booking, but then, like, I checked in at the Sequoia Lodge, and I don't think the person who I checked in with even knew I was on a meal plan. And then when I was like, oh, can you walk me through it? They were like, not really. it's like, okay. So the next thing is now I had read up on it. Now, the interesting thing is we had meal plan standard plus or some such thing. So you can eat at every hotel restaurant, just about every restaurant in the park, especially if it's a buffet, you can eat at them.
Okay.
I was able to book tables from when I made my booking with Disneyland Paris, which was still not early enough and was like months out. I was still not early enough to manage to get any decent times. I've got to tell you, trying to book, for example, downtown at dinner time is phenomenally difficult. And then things like it was really difficult to get reservations. And secondly, it doesn't need to be. So every time I've gone in for dinner in these places, there are huge parts of the restaurant, and I've eaten just about every restaurant in Disneyland Paris now. And because we had the meal planned, we were eating at all the buffets.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to tell you, every time I go in there, they're turning people away that don't have reservations, and that's fine. But they're obviously not taking reservations to fill these seats because there's huge portions of the restaurants that just have nobody sitting in them. Like, huge.
Mm.
Loads of seats. Now, I wish this was just like, oh, it's January, it's quiet. It's not. This happens in June, it happens in July, it happens in November, it happens in Disneyland Paris. What are you doing? People want to pay you money to sit in expensive restaurants and you force them to eat at the counter service and eat at McDonald's rather than letting them pay you 40 euros a head or 50 euros a head or whatever it is.
I mean, it could be a caste problem. There aren't enough people to fill those tables up. I don't know.
Do you not think it's wild though? Like, they're turning money away.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like, this is money on top of money.
They're literally turning money away.
Yeah, like, I get not everybody wants to eat in these restaurants, but there are enough people, and they keep turning people away. The other bizarre thing, in January, they go to low season hours. So, if you go in June or July, basically the restaurant opens at about, I think it's 11:30 a.m. and then just stays open till 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. If you go in January, downtown doesn't open till 6 o'clock at night. Which, again, how many more people could you... I mean, downtown is always flooded. Like, you can never get a space in downtown. And yet, they refuse to do anything about this. Like, rather than being like, oh, it'll sell out even if we offer it from 11 o'clock in the morning through to 11 o'clock at night. They maintain it as closed till 6 p.m. Like, why?
Yeah, I think does downtown open during lunch hours in the summer? Or is it only dinner?
Well, I actually don't know if it was open when I was there. It's definitely open for lunch in the summer. I don't know if it is. I don't think it was in January, because the earliest I could see it was 6.
Yeah, I don't think it wasn't in December neither.
So you've got a restaurant that you can sell out. Like, you can reliably sell this restaurant out, and you're taking the decision to make sure it is closed.
Doesn't make any sense.
So I was annoyed at that. Plaza Gardens was absolutely dreadful. I ate at Plaza. I used to really like Plaza, but Plaza is now dreadful.
Why? Was it the food? The service?
Yep. The food selection is very eclectic. And I get the French don't enjoy cooking meat. I get that. But when you have a buffet that's predominantly meat, and you've got an international audience that aren't French, you do have to provide some meats that possibly are cooked slightly more than it, you know, still bleeding. So, you know, I'd reckon if you took a vet into Plaza Gardens, you could probably resuscitate some of the animals that are there. That could probably happen. The desserts weren't even good. Like, Plaza Gardens has gone down. You used to be able to go to Plaza Gardens and get, you know, they had pasta if you didn't want to eat meat. They had, you know, they had Mickey waffles and stuff. Now it's gone. Just meat, more meat.
Yeah.
Plain rice.
I haven't been to Plaza Garden for years because, I mean, the food doesn't really, you know, call to me. So I would really like to go because it's a gorgeous restaurant. But then again, I'm not paying, what is it, like 45 euros to not eat. So it just doesn't make any sense.
Especially Lagrange. I went to Lagrange. We couldn't book, for whatever reason, we couldn't book the new Billy Bob's version, which is what I wanted to try. So we went to Lagrange. Absolutely phenomenal. Like, that is the underrated best restaurant in Disney. That for some reason, some total food snobs think is not a good restaurant. It is the best buffet in Disneyland Paris. Hands down, case closed.
Maybe, I don't know.
What would you rate above it?
Above it, I'm not sure, but I think it's at the same level of downtown.
Downtown's very good, but downtown doesn't have the variety of food that Lagrange has. Nowhere near.
Well, yeah. But you do have, you know, a lot of international style foods that you don't have at Lagrange.
Downtown is very good. I mean, downtown Lagrange are my number one and number two, and I think Pim's Kitchen is probably number three for me.
Yeah.
Pim's Kitchen. Something has happened at Pim's because there's huge cracks in the ceiling, like huge cracks in the ceiling. Like, you can tell something has moved.
Did you take a photo or anything?
I didn't. It was when I was leaving. I was like, oh, that ceiling's all cracked. And then they've extended the kitchen, but it's not themed. It's just, it's like plasterboard wall that they've painted white.
Huh.
Like, very clear that they've extended the kitchen, but it's terribly themed. Like, I just thought for your flagship restaurant, you know, it was the flagship last year. I would have thought you'd put a bit more effort in to keep, you know, it's very modern, it's very popular, it's highly photographed. People really want a Pim's reservation, and yet you've got.
I think it has to do a little bit with how operations and the Imagineers don't work together. You know, I remember seeing something very similar happening with it was Flight Force. So back when it was Aerosmith, you already had people, you know, put on places to get into the entrance to the car. So that the little door, and they had some stickers on the ground, like with the numbers. And when Flight Force opened, they didn't have those, and they didn't have the plaques installed in the floor like the ones ahead, and it just doesn't make sense to once again put stickers on the floor when you could have a more permanent solution. So it just shows there's some kind of miscommunication between the two teams.
I definitely the upkeep of Pimm's, I definitely thought for having it as one of your kind of flag restaurants, it was, why is there a random wall? Why is the ceiling falling down? Like, why? And the other thing, they've changed the door now, so the door's not glass. Well, it is a glass door, but it now, rather than open forward and backwards, it's now a sliding door. So it's like an automatic sliding door.
I mean, those doors have been broken more times than, I don't know, both Pimm's and the Stark Kitchen. I mean, those doors are constantly broken down and broken, literally broken.
Well, they've put sliding doors now, and I don't think they're going to break because they're a tried and tested, fairly sensible idea. However, in January when it's -3, when you open the front door, it doesn't really matter where you're sitting inside Pimm's. It's a wind tunnel, so you can feel a cold breeze hit you. And the people who were sitting next to the door, luckily I wasn't, but the people who are sitting next to the door, it is freezing. They were wearing jackets. Yes. And I was wow, you need the sort of cylindrical tunnel you walk through to get in. They definitely need a door at the top of that, or some sort of like enclosure, like big plastic enclosure to try and limit how much cold air can fly in there, because people were cold. let's cover the one other restaurant of note just now. So Rosalie. This is the first edition of the... Rosalie is the big showcase piece that Disney were punting as, this is exciting. The building is magnificent. It's very well architected. It looks visually impressive all the way around the lake. It looks impressive on approach. It looks impressive from every side. I really like the vegetation that's built into the walls. I really like the aesthetic. I really think it looks really, really smart. The restaurant they don't leave the tables plain. So as you're walking around the lake, you can see the kind of bottles of water, and you can see the wine glasses, and you can see the cutlery on the table. It looks aesthetically very pleasing. The outside counter was well stocked. It's a very, you walk up, they had baguettes, they had bagels, they had pastries, they had donuts, I think. They were doing coffee and stuff. So it was quite nice that they had a walk up that you could take away from as well. And then here comes the next problem. There's nobody in it ever. So, they invited us, Disneyland Paris invited Inside Ears members to come and try Rosalie. And again, I'd written back to Disneyland Paris and said, look, I'm traveling with my girlfriend anyway. Is there any way we can just have, two wristbands to go and see the electrical show in the reserved area? I don't mind if I don't do dinner. I understand it'll be oversubscribed. So they said they took 50 Inside Ears to Rosalie. I would anticipate they took 20, judging by what I've seen through the window. They were all cramped in a corner, and the restaurant is dead. There's nobody in it. The entire 4 days that I was in Disneyland Paris, I think I've seen a grand total of 10 families divided over 4 days in that restaurant. Now, that's while McDonald's had a queue all the way back down to the steakhouse. Annette's was queued out. The steakhouse didn't have reservations. Lagrange had no spare reservations. Something has got, and the Rainforest Cafe was packed. Like, something has gone wrong. Nobody is going to Restaurant Rosalie. So I don't understand this. When people are sitting outside in -3 degree weather at the sports bar, eating from the New York sandwich shop in the sports bar, I don't understand how that's possible when there's a big empty restaurant sitting there. Nobody is in this restaurant.
The price difference is quite big. Between McDonald's and the snacks and everything. It's but then very
the Royal, the Royal Pub's €22 for fish and chips.
Yeah. But was it the Royal Pub? Was the Royal Pub, you know, full?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so, I mean, Kateology has actually put that it's probably just British people, and it probably is just British people, to be totally honest. but keep in mind, the amount of Brits in Disneyland Paris in January is small compared to the amount of French people in Disneyland Paris in January. And yet, Rosalie had nobody in it. In fact, Kateology, are you not in Disneyland Paris just now? How many people are in Rosalie tonight? You should go and check. Like, see how many, what time is it? 18:45 here, so. Oh, you're home. Anyway, yep. It's not busy. I'm going to tell you it's not busy. You need to keep an eye out for this. Everybody needs to keep an eye out for this when they go. We need to start a count of how many people are in that restaurant when you're there, because here is my bet. And I've said it to you privately, Bernardo, but mm-hmm. I'm going to publicly pin my colours to the mast on this. That restaurant is going to get reimagined by July, and it will probably drop the price, drop the food to a much cheaper quality, and probably become a cheaper restaurant. So Zoom contributed that it doesn't accept meal plans. It doesn't take meal plan, that is true. That but then
might
just
be a good reason. No?
Neither do Royal Pub though. And neither does I suppose McDonald's cheap anyway. But anyway, my point is I don't see how Rosalie's gonna survive if they don't come up with some sort of in fact, Rosalie's not run by Disneyland Paris either. It's run by a different company, isn't it?
Yeah,
is it the same
company? Yeah, the same company runs Royal Pub as well.
Well, there you go. I can see very quickly by July it says you have the Royal Pub and you've got Royal Pub Rosalie. Let me assure you that someone is doing the maths here and thinking we've got this wrong.
We'll see. I mean, I'd like to try Rosalie before the menu change. Let's see.
Yeah, I think you're gonna have to be quick. I was gonna try. They do some sort of. I think it's some sort of pork dish or sausage or something. I was gonna try that. It wasn't the worst menu. I certainly could have found something to eat, but I didn't get my invite and I had the meal plan. So to Zoon's point in the chat. I was a meal plan person, so it didn't appeal to me in the slightest because, you know, I could pay a lot that I'd already paid a lot. And the meal plan, let me tell you, having paid for the meal plan, it's lovely because you don't spend anything, like, on food you spend nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way the meal plan's cheaper than just eating normally. Like, I've come back about double the weight I went out because I eat a buffet twice a day. So, I've got to tell you, the meal plan is absolutely not worth it. The annual pass discount in restaurants is probably better. Kateology has also said it is 100% cheaper if you eat at the expensive restaurants of €55. Yeah, I get that, but you'll never get a reservation there. You can get a buffet.
a year prior.
Yeah, book. If you're going to go with the meal plan, that is the other trick. You have to know that you're booking very early and that you're getting your reservations instantly, because otherwise, you know, it doesn't quite work.
It is a year earlier, right?
Yes,
hotel guests can reserve a year earlier. So yeah, that's...
Yep. But I mean,
that's a lot of time.
Yeah, but I don't think they release the whole inventory. Like, I'm convinced they release about 5 spots just to make sure you have to eat a counter service. One thing I will say, the French law on no free refills is absolutely stupid, because it's horrible. Like Disneyland Paris, you need, if you are listening, and I know sometimes you do listen, just include a second, or maybe even push the boat out a little bit, a third drink in the price.
Yeah,
just let us have, it cannot just be one drink that is tiny. Like, or at least make it a pint of Diet Cola or something. Make it a litre of Diet Cola
exactly.
or something.
I think it was it at Lagrange that they serve like 25 centiliters?
Yeah, it's just...
It's a joke. And another one, it's like 4 or 5 euros.
The other thing is, it's so difficult to get a second drink as well. Like, you've got to flag somebody down, then they bring you another receipt, mm-hmm. and then you've got to go away and pay for it before you even get the drink. Like, To be honest, I cheat. I just take in cans and just top up one drink. But but that's not because I'm too cheap to buy it. Well, it's cheaper, but it's not because I'm being cheap. It's because it's such a bloody farce to get a second drink. Like, it's just...
Again, money. Free money is, once again, just making it hard.
Absolute nonsense with the drinks. The Lucky Nugget, just a last minute shout out. We ate at the Lucky Nugget with one of our vouchers one day, and I've got to tell you, the Lucky Nugget is an underrated, sort of elevated counter service restaurant. It's much better than the Cowboy Barbecue Cookout. It is just a nice atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
If you can and you've got the choice between, you know, if you're looking for a counter service, it's not really counter service because it's, you're kind of served at the table, but it's priced almost like a counter service.
Yeah.
The Lucky Nugget is fantastic. I really rate that.
I just wish they'd bring back the show, though. I've never seen it in person, but, you know, the show, I've heard very good things about it, and the atmosphere would be completely different to what it is now.
Yeah. Do you want to take us on to our next topic, which is the live entertainment, the shows of Disneyland Paris?
Oh, yeah. Sure. So, I mean, we've already talked about it a little bit on the electrical sky parade, which definitely is a part. But just last year, we also saw the start of Together, which you just watched, right?
This is the first time I haven't actually watched Together. Now, I didn't realize they stopped you. Like, they really, really police recording of this show. There's a couple of it on YouTube, but there's not many. But yeah, this was the first time I seen Together.
And?
Well,
how was it?
so many people say it's bad. But I thought it was far better than a lot of the... It was much better than the Marvel show. It was really well put together. I really liked the story. I really liked the songs. I think it well integrated. It's got some cool tricks. It uses... the balloon from Up, for example. A lot of people don't realise that one of the balloons in the show is actually a drone. So it uses a lot of cool technology. Really cool songs. Really well integrated. I came away. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought that the Together show was fantastic. I made sure to see that several times while I was there, and I'll see it several times again. That is a fantastic show.
Yeah. So how would you rate it? Mickey and the Magician at first place, or Rhythms of the Pride Lands, or Together, or the other show I haven't watched once?
Dream Factory.
Yeah, exactly.
See, that's because I bet the reason you've not watched it is because it's called Disney Junior.
I mean, I'm not really sure. I just never had the thing to go and to watch it. But I mean, if you've said several times it's amazing, so I might as well.
Well, Dream Factory is a fantastic show. Like, it is. You know, Dream Factory is a fantastic show. It is geared at children, but it's still a fantastic show. I would say Mickey and the Magician is a really magical show in the sense that you expect to be able to be that wowed in Disney. And then Together's a lot of fun. Like, Together was a lot better than I expected it to be, and I would put it on par. I'd put it on par with Mickey and the Magician. Like, I don't think it's worse in any way. It's certainly better than the Marvel show, and it's better than Cinemagique that was showing its age. So
okay,
I was a great fan of Animagique as well, though. That's gone. Mickey and the Magician's better than Animagique, though. And then Rhythm of Pride Lands. I like Rhythm of Pride Lands. Everybody knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, I really like the Lion King show.
Oh, the Lion King show. I do have something, and I don't really mean for this to sound like some great big political fight on Brexit or anything. But it's very clear they have no English singers now.
Really?
So, Brexit has obviously stopped, you know, a lot of people who would normally have travelled, I presume, from, like, London across to Paris to do it as, like, a show. And every single person in the show is now French. which obviously isn't a bad thing. It's a French park and everything like that. But every song is English.
Mm-hmm.
So unlike...
you have a little accent.
Yeah. Like, unlike Mickey and the Magician, where it's a blend, and unlike Together, where it's a blend, and Animagique, where it's a blend, Rhythm of Pride Lands is English.
100% English, yeah.
Now, the problem is, you've got people who... English is very clearly not their first language. So, they can hit the... They can sing the song, but it doesn't... I don't know how to explain it. You're very aware that it's a non-natural English speaker singing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we wouldn't be better just changing some of the songs to the French version.
That's an interesting question. Because, you know, I've seen some French people say that it should definitely have a mix between English and French, just like Together or just like Mickey and the Magician. Mm-hmm. But personally, I think that since it's such a show around the music itself, personally, I just keep it as it is, you know?
Yeah, but your problem is it's French people singing English songs, which, I mean, me singing a French song is always going to be worse.
Yeah, of course. But I don't know. I know. It's a difficult question.
I mean, the chat is saying here that they'd prefer an English song with a French accent over French Lion King music. So maybe
I kind of tend to agree. Just because I'm not anywhere accustomed to the French Lion King translation.
Do me a favor. See, once we come off this podcast, go onto YouTube and see if someone's uploaded a version recently. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then let me know if you hear a difference, because
okay, you know, I've actually been listening a lot to the album on Apple Music, the recording of the show, and the renditions are so cool and different.
The show, I mean, don't get me wrong, the show is fantastic. The song rewrites are fantastic. The cast done a really good job. I was very impressed, blown away. It's a great, great show, end to end. But it's different now, and I don't know how to explain it. It's just, it's different now. So, yeah, that struck me. However, I would take, now this is where we need to compare it to other parks. I don't think there's a universal show off note that I'd even say was any good. The Halloween Horror Nights shows are always dreadful. but like, in Hollywood Studios in Orlando, which is probably the closest comparison, the Voyage of the Little Mermaid was absolutely dreadful. The Beauty and the Beast show is far too long and is dreadful. The Castle stage shows in the Magic Kingdom are dreadful. The Finding Nemo show in Animal Kingdom is dreadful. And, you know, these are all dreadful shows, and they all survive. And if you put Rhythm of Pride Lands in any of those parks, it would absolutely blow them away. If you put Together in any of those parks, it would blow it away. If you put Mickey and the Magician in any of those parks, it would blow them away. I think the only one that's maybe quite good is, I don't even know if it's still on, but California had Mickey and the Magical Map. That was quite a good show.
Oh, I think they closed it. Obviously,
it was too good, so they closed it. There were some people saying we should get rid of Together and we should get Rogers the Musical. Rogers the Musical is dreadful. Who are these people?
I really enjoyed the videos.
Tasteless. Oh, there was one. What was it? Aladdin at the Hyperion Theatre that they've closed in California Adventure. That was quite good.
Okay.
So Aladdin was good. The Frozen one was dreadful. Rogers the Musical was dreadful. I know you're going to disagree with me on that, but it was. So... Disneyland Paris is just on another level. Like, Disneyland Paris...
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
I went to see Wicked. Wicked's touring production was in the Edinburgh Playhouse, and I went to see Wicked on January the 3rd. So I seen it like 5 days before I went to Disneyland Paris. No idea why people are out there loving Wicked. Wicked is 3 hours too long at a 2.5 hour show, 2 hours and 45 minute show, 3 hours too long. You can do the math there. It has about three songs that are worth it. It has a couple of nice effects. But Wicked has just, I mean, Together, if you watch Together, Rhythm of Proud Lands, or Mickey and the Magician, and then look at Wicked, you just think, this is like some B-tier nonsense. And I don't even have to, like, once I've bought my ticket to Disneyland Paris, I can see three shows.
Yeah.
I can see four shows, if you include Dream Factory, that are better than Wicked for free. Like, Disneyland Paris, like, this theatre district thing, keep the shows. This is going to go down well. This is good.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And then we're getting Alice.
Yeah, I forgot about Alice. Oh, no, you have five shows. You also have the Frozen one in Animation Celebration, which I don't think is as good as the others. But I mean, you still have it, so you have five shows.
Well, you need something for the kids to do. And you've got Stitch. Someone's put in the chat there as well. You've got Talking with Crush and Stitch. Not Stitch, sorry, Talking with Crush.
Yeah.
Is it not Stitch? I have no idea.
No, I think Crush is in Epcot.
It is. Crush is in Epcot. It's...
Yeah, Stitch is in Studios.
It's Stitch. It is Stitch. And you can do the English
Tiana's. We have Alice coming up very soon, Alice this spring.
Do we know anything about it?
No, we don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about it. I mean, it's going to be something like an interactive show where the audience kind of helps find the ending and change a little bit with the ending.
Yeah, we know it's got a BMX bike.
Yeah, but here's, that's it.
Here's a bit of controversial opinion. We're very good, or Disneyland Paris has been very good at castle stage shows. It's been very good with... Dream and Shine Bright are ready for the ride. It's done very well with Together. It's done very well with Mickey and the Magician. It's done very well with Disney Dream Factory. Motors Action, arguably, was a Paris... But wasn't arguably. It was a Paris first attraction. Arguably, was quite good. The hit rate... And if we look at the drone show and we look at all the, you know, the Disneyland Paris specific entertainment, the Bastille Day and the New Year's Eve and everything, and the AP parties people in America would kill for, you know, the on-site entertainment team at Disneyland Paris are absolutely phenomenal. So they're dedicating, like, there's, I don't know, 5,000 seats or something in that outside arena. They must have some confidence this is a good show. Like, it's brought to you by the same team that brought you Jungle Book Jive. And Jungle Book Jive was phenomenal. So, I think we're being a bit harsh saying it's going to be rubbish, because, to be honest, all the evidence of their history is that it'll be very good.
Yeah, exactly. I think people really got caught up in the BMX stuff. I don't think it's going to be a stunt show from start to finish. I just think there's going to be a couple of scenes with those stunt performers.
Yeah.
So I'm really hopeful, and I really think it's going to be a very big surprise to everyone that's not sure it's going to be a good one. But I, you know, as you said, history points at it being good. So I don't know.
Go and see how dreadful Beauty and the Beast is at Hollywood Studios, or the Nemo show is at Animal Kingdom, and then come back to me and say that you're worried that the Disneyland Paris team might not be having a good idea. I am confident this is going to be a good show, simply because everything we can see points to the evidence that they actually can do live entertainment very well.
And that's another thing that kind of pisses me off, because there's... You know, back in the day, you used to have a lot of streetmosphere that's just not present anymore. You know, and I think that's they miss quite a lot in that. You could have, you know, the performers in Main Street. You could have the Hollywood citizens in studios. You could have a lot of fun with this streetmosphere, and I don't know why they don't do it. I really don't. You know, we got a small taste of it from Avengers Campus, you know, the ones in the rooftops. I mean, that kind of counts like it. But, you know, it's something that's missing, and I'm not sure why.
Well, it certainly didn't get spent on the parade.
Yeah, exactly.
Disney stars in parade, I just wondered, like, I was watching it and, like, the crush float is now, like, dead. Like, that, other than it travels the parade route, it, you know, there's no activity on that float whatsoever. There's entire floats that have seized up. There's the, I don't know if it's for the cold or it just doesn't work, but the Lion King section where they have the two spindles that they run round on doesn't work.
Yep.
So Peter Pan float
is now lost half of it. The back part is just not there anymore.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Because the odd thing is, if you killed that parade tomorrow and said, we're just bringing back Dream and Shine Brighter ready for the ride, people would, that would be considered an upgrade at this point.
Yeah.
Even the dragon doesn't breathe fire anymore. Like, Disney World's dragon breathes fire. So we're clearly past the dragons breathing fire thing. What the other thing I wanted to talk about was Magic Pass.
Yeah.
So my experience with Magic Pass is basically the exact same as it is in Disney World now, apart from you don't get a wristband.
Yep.
So you, well, for your meal plan, you can pay for your meals. You know, it's covered on there. For your hotel room access, you touch the magic lock on the door and it lights up and lets you in. For your park access, you literally tap the turnstile. It's not, a lot of people think it's a barcode. It isn't. It's an RFID chip.
Chip, yeah.
So you're tapping to enter.
Also, the Premier Access touch points, they have an RFID reader in them, in the little circle. So it just, doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand it. There's some sort of conspiracy here, because actually they've rolled out a magic band just without the band. That's all that's happened. It's like by secret. But
I don't understand it. And I mean, once again, it's free money they would be making with each magic band. I mean, how much does a magic band cost? Is it like $20, $25 now?
Yeah. It's $19 for a basic one, and it's $25 all the way to like $80.
So, and also, they're making a lot of money on those. Like, the percentage must be crazy compared to manufacturing costs.
Well, Five Guys got an RFID chip in their cola to make sure you don't have a second one. in case you break the law. So you can imagine it must only be, you know, it's like 10 cents for a chip. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the plastic on the band is dirt cheap. They've already made it. They've already done all the R&D on it. It's very clear Disneyland Paris runs on the same RFID chip. It's very clear it works. So absolutely mind-blowing.
Why not just upgrade it to Magic Band? I mean, Disneyland did it, and Disneyland doesn't even have the
features.
Have the features of the Magic Pass, which is crazy. Yep. It's absolutely crazy, and you have to tap with the phone to get in. There's no touch point. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
This is like when they were like, the Disneyland Paris app is separate, so that we can do specific features. Well, why do none of them work? Like, what? Where are they? When do we get to see them?
Never.
Moving on. Let's talk about the village. So, Rosalie is obviously stunning. They've started work on upgrading the hotel entrances. for security, and they're working on the Avenue Paul ceremony, or we've seen the plans, like there's been some building permits or some rubbish going for them. So they'll be getting the American style security gate treatment. They've nearly finished the sort of Disney Village relocation of the fence for the 800th time. and they've put a floor in, which I've got to tell you looks like the same floor that was there prior to it, but I'm assured it's not. World of Disney now looks quite impressive. Vapiano looks impressive. Five Guys looks impressive. The Gaumont Theatre looks old, but they've refurbished the Wild West show entrance. That's now a lot plainer. There's nothing in it, but it's now done. You've got Planet Hollywood, which is completely empty. You've got a Nets, which looks absolutely tragically old. You've got the Disney store next to the sports bar, and it looks like some sort of bootleg version of World of Disney. And it's funny because they treat them very differently. So in World of Disney, you've got the Big Thunder Mountain range, you've got the Phantom Manor, you've got the Small World range, you've got, you know, you've got the nice things, nice plates and, you know, nice fashion wear and stuff. And then you go across to the one by the sports bar and it honestly is like some sort of Chinese import, like, like fake. It's the Wish version of World of Disney. So you've got Wish World of Disney right next to Real World of Disney, which makes no sense. you've got the Royal Pub, which looks quite nice. Starbucks looks quite nice. The Steakhouse doesn't look too bad either, so it looks okay.
Yeah,
you've got the Earl of Sandwich, which never really conformed to the look anyway, so it's fine. McDonald's looks ancient, but
it looks very old.
Yeah, they have though. I mean, McDonald's, because I think McDonald's just have a bit better work ethic at getting buildings built than Disneyland Paris. Because they've already, like, dug out all the foundations and are getting ready to, like, go vertical on the site. So McDonald's is going to be open this year. Like, I'm calling it. McDonald's is opening this year, the new one.
I don't think so. Just saying that because I think they announced, actually, let me check it out. I think they announced an opening date of, like, 2035.
Let me see if I can find it. I'm telling you just now. The speed they were working at and the amount of people they had on that site, things are happening there quickly. That's where, you know how they were talking about there might be delays to the lake opening and such.
Let me just read this tweet about McDonald's. Disneyland Paris announces a new McDonald's restaurant in Disney Village to replace the current one as part of the multi-year transformation of Disney Village to open in 2026. What?
Bernardo, they've lied to you. They've made it. they mean it's opening in December the 26th.
Okay.
There seems to be so much progress there that it's unreal. Rosalie looks really good, and the fashion shop, the external, looked quite good as well, but it was obviously closed. And I didn't realize if you go into I forget what store it is, it's like Lego in the art shop or whatever, you connect to it, but they're actually not refurbishing the inside of it.
The which one? The gallery? Art gallery or something like that?
No. You know the one they've shut there's like the shop they're doing up. I forget what it was because I was never in it. But the Disneyland Paris store. The fashion one, or whatever it's called.
The kids' fashion, I think.
That they're redoing the outside, but the inside doesn't appear to have any work done to it.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't think it's getting refurbished on the inside, just the outside to look nice. Either that, or they're going to do it, you know, like an interior renovation. It's a lot easier and a lot quicker than. You know, next year. So final thing I wanted to bring up while we're kind of trucking along is the methods of getting to Disneyland Paris. So this is just a moan, but I took the TGV, which now, if you were here and you got my tip about 6 months ago, which is don't even bother buying a ticket because you can just jump on, you now can't. They scan every ticket before you get on the platform. but the TGV... It turns out there's about three companies that run TGV trains. And the tickets are not, unlike in the UK or such, where you buy a ticket and it just is valid on every rail, you know, company in the UK. That's not a case in Paris. It doesn't seem to be the case. You have to have a ticket for the specific train company that's coming to the station.
Okay.
Even though the TGV ticket I bought had no assigned seat, they wouldn't let me on an earlier train off the same company because they were like, "Oh, you've not booked this train." And I was like, "No, I gave myself time in case, like, you're, you know, like if immigration was running slow or something." So yeah. It turns out that you just basically can't get on an earlier train. You're committed to the train you're getting on, even though it doesn't have an assigned seat. Just a bizarre situation. Like, it feels like, you know, I'm only going 9 minutes. Worst case scenario, I stand in the bar cart. Like,
yeah.
I didn't think the TGV was up to much, I must say. Nice train, though.
Oh, yeah. It's a very nice train, but they make everything a lot complicated in Paris when it comes to transit. Like, the RER tickets and Ticket Plus and special zones and the TGV and everything's a different system. And you have to have a card, and it's just so strange. So strange. But yeah.
But that was it. Do you have anything else you want to cover today?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, well then. That is...
Yeah?
I don't know how long we've been live for. We have been live... Oh, no, it was more than an hour. I was going to say, we've maybe made it under an hour. We haven't. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us on this review of Disneyland Paris on the Disney Discord podcast with Graham and Bernardo. Have a lovely week, and hopefully the recorded version of this will be out real soon.
Yeah, thank you very much, everyone. See you next time.
Bye-bye.